Welcome to Steppin' Out, the 12-step meeting on the air. Tonight you'll meet real people with true stories of addiction and recovery. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hello and welcome to America's 12-step radio show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. The stories you're about to hear are real. It's a 12-step meeting on the air, so kick back, listen in, because if you ever wondered what went on inside of a 12-step meeting but were afraid to ask, you're going to find out right now. We have guests from Al-Anon who are going to talk about what it's like to live with an active alcoholic and how to get help. We have Kadya. Kadya, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the active alcoholic or addict in your life, and then what it was like to come into recovery, and a little bit about what it's like now.
Well, the alcoholic in my life is an addict, a drug addict.
My dad. Okay.
He's clean for over 12 years, thank God. And actually, I came to the program only 2 years ago.
Great.
And he brought me to the program.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. Tell us about what your childhood was like with him. I mean, was there a lot of doubt and insecurity, or what was the...
Insecurity is the main word. Yeah,
okay.
Definitely. My dad, my family was together all the time.
Okay.
My mom stuck to my dad through all his addiction. And actually, my childhood was beautiful when I look back.
Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Switzerland, and I was we moved to Israel and back to Switzerland. So it was every 10 years.
Okay.
And my dad actually functioned in his life. He had a factory.
Okay.
He was a good dad. He raised me and my little brother. Mm-hmm. And everything was actually perfect, you know? Perfect in a way of we were a family.
Right.
Everything functioned.
Okay.
So for me, it was kind of weird because I couldn't even tell if it's wrong to be a drug addict. Because if everything is okay, if he's functioning, what's wrong about it?
Meaning that he was holding it together professionally.
Yeah.
He was paying the bills. Everything was cool. Yeah. And it was hard for you to see that there was some sort of a problem. What was his drug of choice?
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah. He wasn't using needles.
No needles.
But everything else. And I saw it. I grew up seeing this.
What's your earliest recollection of your dad getting high?
Wow. I think when I was 3 years old.
Really? That early?
Yeah. I think I remember my dad and his family, his friends were in the living room. I was about 3 years old, yeah. And my mom was smoking weed.
Okay.
By the time it was a flower power period.
Okay.
And my mom fainted. And I came to my dad and I asked what happened. And he said, yeah, she was cutting onion and she fainted from that.
Killer onion, huh?
Yeah. And I love onion. I mean, I have no issues with onion today. Absolutely no. But
stop smoking that onion.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But that's the first. But I remember when I was about 11 years old.
Okay.
They were smoking cigarettes. My mom stopped smoking, of course, when I got like 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It was nothing for her. When I was about 11 years old, we lived in a village in Israel. And I was always giving them attitude about smoking cigarettes.
You just didn't like the smokers?
No.
Yeah.
And one time I just yelled at them and I told them, you know what? I don't care if you smoke cigarettes. I don't even care if you do drugs. And I ran out of the house.
Huh.
And it was the first time I said something like that. And my mom came after me. I remember I was in the field's grass. I was holding my teddy bear, sitting on the grass. My mom came up to me, and she asked me, why did I say drugs? And I said, I don't know, I just said that. So she said that if I said that, I'm probably ready to hear the truth. And then she told me about his addiction.
What did she tell you that day?
She said that my dad is an addict. He uses drugs.
So she was aware, fully aware, that this was what was going on.
When they got married, she didn't know it's a problem.
Okay.
He was smoking weed like every young guy.
Yeah, it was just, okay.
And she didn't recognize it as a problem. He wasn't drinking.
They were smoking pot together and it was...
Yeah, now and then, not even too much.
But it was pretty innocent.
Yeah, it was.
When did she believe he crossed that line?
I think when she thought it would stop when I was born.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't.
And there was expectation for him to stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she was disappointed.
She was.
Okay.
But she stayed there.
And she stayed there anyway.
She stayed there.
Did your mom find this fellowship?
My mom found it when my dad got sober.
She
got
did.
Clean. Yeah.
Okay. Tell us a little bit more about, I mean, was it hard for you moving around as a little girl, going from country to country? Was it difficult for you to have friends and
today I'm 27 and I still do that.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
My parents live in Switzerland. I moved by myself by the age of 20 to Israel.
Okay.
And I came here just a few months ago.
You did?
By myself.
You did. So
I see the pattern of having changed, some change in my life. But it's not, I don't think it's the problem. My problem wasn't that. My problem was, I was an outsider as a kid. I was out there exploring the nature and making friends with animals because kids couldn't understand me, actually.
Okay.
And I was always thinking and feeling that I'm alone in this world and nobody can possibly understand what I feel. And I think today I understand, looking back, that my dad wasn't emotionally available for me. He loved me. He was there for me, but he was sort of, he was numb.
Okay. He was physically numb. There, but emotionally gone.
Yeah, it was like it came, you know, it was not stable.
Okay.
That was my problem. That was my, what made me insecure.
So that instability coupled with this, you know, constant moving and, you know, it must have been difficult growing up.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, today I'm looking back. I have no regrets. I don't want my childhood to be different.
Right.
I am who I am because of what I've been through. And moving from country to country, it just made me, like, I've seen so much.
Sure.
So many people. And if I meet with my friends from the village, I see the difference. And I'm really, really grateful for that, you know? So it depends how I look at it.
What were your friendships like as a teenager? What were they like then?
As a teenager?
Yeah.
My friendships were mostly with men.
Okay.
I couldn't have girls as friends.
How come?
I don't know. I was a tomboy, so I guess that's why. I don't know if it has anything to do with addiction. I'm not sure.
Hmm.
But guys understood me more.
And this was platonic, you know.
Yeah, of course. No, I had relationships, of course.
Okay.
But mostly were like men who understood me. And most of my friends were teenagers who had a lot of problems. They had really big package on their back, so I can actually help them and reveal and
oh, so you
and
like
save them.
You like the broken guys, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you try and fix them and that kind of like little projects?
It's kind of yeah, it's yeah. I don't know if it's possible. Some of them, I think it was successful, but it had nothing to do with me.
But there this kind of thing where you thought maybe if you fix them, you could fix Dad?
I don't know if I thought that far. I'm not sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that when I tried to fix my dad, I told him that. I tried to fix him a lot of time.
When you tried to fix him, you what?
I was talking to him, telling him, and telling him how to... He should fix his life.
Okay.
Not through other people. But for me, it was like... It was perfect because it gave me a reason to live. If I can help others and save others, then there's a reason for me to... You know, for my existence.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, I ran from everything. And all I did is actually be on stage all the time. If it's theater, if it's singing, if it's dancing.
How were you as a student and how was your... Were you able to sink your teeth into school? Were you?
Yes.
You were?
Yes, definitely. I was an overachiever.
Uh-huh.
Up until now, actually, when I think of it. I was an overachiever.
Does that have anything to do with your...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Why is that?
Because I think that I was looking for a reason. I wanted to make people love me because I thought I have to work hard to make people love me.
Ah, so it's all based on approval.
Yeah, definitely.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty clear to me now.
And how far did you take that extreme of ambition?
Wow. I mean...
How far would you go?
How far would I go?
What would you give up?
I would give up my happiness, my serenity, definitely. I would do a lot of things to make people happy, you know, not to make myself happy. And I was constantly on this edge of not knowing when I'm doing wrong or when I'm doing something good.
Hmm.
So it's all about approval. When somebody next to me was close to me felt good, I was relieved. Okay, I did my thing and I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm allowed to be loved right now.
Hmm. And do you feel like you missed anything by pursuing that?
No, I don't think so. I missed my own serenity. I missed my own spirituality, of course. But I found that.
Cool.
And today I'm still an overachiever. I still do a lot of things.
Yeah, it's not all bad.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Sure.
I learned to love it, to know why I'm doing it.
You were in some very oppositional environments. We were just talking about that at the break. I mean, Israel and Switzerland are about as extremely opposites as you're going to find, you know?
Yeah.
What was that like? I mean, just bouncing around between those two cities as a girl?
It was hard. I had to adjust myself constantly. And I was always a stranger.
Yeah.
And actually, when I went back by the age of 20 to Israel, I felt at home for the first time.
You did?
Yeah. I felt like I don't have to explain myself. Maybe because I've grown up a little bit.
Hmm.
But in Switzerland, I felt a complete stranger.
You did?
My mom is Swiss.
Oh, okay.
That's where the two countries. So even though I was born there and my mom is Swiss and I was part of it, actually, I didn't feel like I'm really belonging.
Hmm.
But in Israel, it was different. Israel embraces everybody.
Yeah.
Whoever was there understands.
Cool.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, as a girl, you have some doubts here as far as, you know, your dad's not present. He's physically there and he's providing and, you know, the money's there and the things are there and you have this father that's there yet completely detached from you. What was it like? How'd you feel? I mean, how has that affected your relationships going forward?
With him?
With everyone.
Let's say that the relationships that I had with men, they were very sick.
Okay.
Like, I was like my mom. My mom actually took care of my dad all these years. And that's what made her feel alive.
Okay.
And that's what I thought. I took this pattern and I actually used it in my relationships. And I used to take care of my men, the men in my life. And it always, the relationships were sick. They were obsessive. Not really obsessive, but yeah, in our terms, they were obsessive.
Okay.
And manipulative. And, like, love wasn't really an issue. Like, after one day, I could say, I'm in love, head over heels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I wouldn't even question anything. I would just accept him the way he is. Actually, no, I would change him the way I want him.
Okay, well, were you successful? Or?
No.
No, okay. No, this goes back
definitely
to...
Definitely not.
The trying to find broken people back in, you know, when you were a little girl, too. You were talking about that, and even in your teenage years. So this did carry all the way into your adult years.
Until I came to the program. That changed my life.
Interesting.
Definitely.
And what about your mom? How did that model or that role model as a woman serve for you growing up?
My mom... When I talk about my mom, I see an angel, actually.
Oh, okay.
She was thinking about everybody else but herself, taking care of everybody. And if something, if she needs something, a lot of people around the world will just come and be there for her in an instant. She's so amazing. But it has shortcomings. And she didn't give herself enough. And she actually was focusing on keeping the family together all these years. So she was there for me. She was definitely there for me. But she was working. She was the I don't know how to call it, but she was the rock.
Mm.
She was what held us together.
She was the stability.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Now, let me ask you. We were also talking offline about how Tel Aviv's got a notorious reputation for partying now. Did you fall into that trap? How was your relationship like with drugs and alcohol?
Well, the first time I ever got drunk was around 7-8 months ago, New Year's, and that was the first time I came to New York.
Really?
For a vacation.
And you never got drunk before?
Never.
How'd that happen?
Never. I was extreme. I went to the other extreme.
You did?
Yeah. And all the men, women, friends, everybody that was around me was drinking even beer. I had the worst attitudes toward them. I'm like, whoa,
okay.
You're an alcoholic. You have issues.
Go, all right,
go check
that
out.
I got you. You're like zero tolerance.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually the first time I ever tried weed was about a month and a half ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's embarrassing. Am I blushing?
No, it's cool. You're doing fine.
But it's not really my thing.
It's not your thing.
It's nice, but the extreme of it is not really doing good to me.
No.
I have a natural high, and I really know to appreciate it.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I'm going to stick to it.
There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's fantastic to hear that, you know, you just got drunk for the first time at 27. I think that's great. It's so rare, you know. It's like, wow.
It is.
But it's amazing. But the relationships with the men that you were talking about, were those men alcoholic?
No.
They weren't?
No. They had different addictions.
Like what? What kind of stuff were you?
Obsession, women. Not women, actually.
They were women.
I was their obsession,
okay.
Actually.
But what was the brokenness in the men that you were attracted to?
They were miserable.
They were miserable?
Yeah.
Okay. But not necessarily alcoholics or addicts, just...
No.
Okay.
I never got even close to this. Like men who touched... Even men who smoked cigarettes, I couldn't even get close to them.
Wow.
I was extreme, totally extreme.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we take it that the recovery process came to you while you were still in Israel?
Yes.
It did. How did it come to you?
Well, my dad actually came to visit me in Israel every year.
Okay.
And every year he tried, actually. He said, listen, there's this group your mom going to, Al-Anon. I knew about it for 12 years. Why don't you go there? And I'm like, Dad, just keep the distance. I know how to take care of myself. I went to different things to you know, spiritual courses and seminars. And everything was good for me, but it held only for the period of time that I went to the seminar.
Right.
It was really effective. I was so excited about it, but it faded in time. And 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, November, on my birthday, he came up to me again. Why don't you go there? And I'm like, okay. Just like that.
No problem?
And I went there, and the first meeting, I cried.
Why?
I cried. Because, first of all, I sat there. I was sharing a little bit about my history. And everybody was telling me how much they love me. Like, everybody all of a sudden told me, we love you. And I just started crying. I was, like, shocked.
It's overwhelming.
I started crying. Yeah, because like, how can they love me if they don't know me? I didn't impress them yet, you know? And then I realized that I actually found home. Like, a place that people know me and accept me the way I am. And they come from the same background. So that's why I cried, actually. And since then, my life became different, totally different.
Did you know you were in the right place?
Yes.
At the end of that meeting?
Yes, definitely.
What were the things that they told you to do at the meeting?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Actually, no, just keep coming back.
Just keep coming back.
Yeah, that's all.
What about the process of recovery?
Let's say it was ups and downs all the time. The reason I went there was I was actually in a relationship.
Okay.
And I felt like, okay, let's go to these meetings and I'll learn how to make him change.
Ah,
again.
So let me pause you there. Wait, so you thought if you went to Al-Anon, you would learn how to change people. Oh, okay, that's cool. I've heard guys come in here and say they thought if they went to AA, they'd learn how to drink. So it's kind of the same thing another way. But no, it's not embarrassing.
Well,
I think it's kind of cool.
I went there, but all like really, like it didn't take too much, long to realize that it's not the fact. It's not going to happen.
Right, right.
And yeah, things have changed. Like the little things, I'm still the same person with the same fears.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that drive me now is they come from a different place, you know? Like I'm more serene. I wake up in the morning and I have a reason to live without doing anything. I'm happy.
Hmm.
And actually, I'm looking at the half of the glass today. And I never used to even see it.
Hmm.
And that changes the whole attitude. Like, I mean, the way I look at my things in my life, they make me a happier person.
What are your relationships like now with men and other people, you know?
They're understanding.
Okay.
Very understanding. Let's say that my friends, my girlfriends,
yeah,
they sometimes just hold their head like that and they ask, how can you deal with things like that? How can you accept things like that? And for me, it's not a big deal because I understand. I know that people do things because they do it, not because they want to harm me, not because they want to do it to me.
Right.
So I know everybody has their own reasons, their own thoughts. It's beyond me. Whatever is theirs, their behavior, their decisions, it's not mine.
Mm.
And I used to try to control it, not control it like physically, but in my head, try to change it, to control it. But I couldn't, and I was helpless, and I didn't know what to do. And now when I'm letting go, they have their own lives. It's too much for me to handle. I can't even control my own life.
Mm.
So how can I even try to control somebody else?
Wow.
So today it's freedom. That's how I can explain. Like,
and you mentioned you have girlfriends now, which is completely different than what you had said earlier, where you did not feel comfortable with women at all. How are those relationships?
They're terrific. I haven't even, I never noticed how it started. It just started, you know. Maybe I don't know. Like my magnetic field is different now,
yeah.
So I bring people to me who have good energies.
You're letting better people in.
Definitely.
Yeah, interesting. And your dad's sober for how long now?
Over 12 years.
That's amazing.
It is.
And how's
amazing.
Your relationship with him?
Great. I still have some issues with him. When he gives me criticism, I cannot accept it.
How come?
I don't know. Because he is. I don't know. I was always looking up to him.
Okay.
And he is a musician, a jazz musician. And all the time that I had a career as a singer, I could never bring myself to sing in front of him. Never. And I was numb.
Hmm.
And I think that's still an open issue for me to handle. And nothing is closed yet. I still have a long way to go. And all the issues I have with my dad, I will definitely, I don't know when, someday address them. But he's in the program. My mom is in the program. My brother, I hope that he will find his way to the program too. But we have a communication, a really healthy communication in our family.
That's excellent. That's excellent.
Yes.
And anything you want to say to the new person who might be considering Al-Anon?
Well, all I can say, you're not alone.
Okay.
You're not alone, and it's not scary. It's not that scary to touch these dark spots.
Cool. Katya, thanks so much for sharing with us.
Thank you.
You're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew. This is Steppin' Out.